Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Today is Tuesday, January the 5th, and this is your host, Austin Peterson, on the Freedom Report podcast. Thanks very much for tuning in. Sorry we haven't updated a lot, but of course, as you know, I am running for President of the United States. So it's a little difficult to keep a regular podcast schedule when I'm currently trying to take over the government and leave everyone alone. But it is important, of course, to give you guys good content on a regular basis because, you know, I got to make money too. This is how I earn my coin. So I've got to make sure I keep these going out for you guys so that you guys can have good content at the Libertarian Republic as well. And I really appreciate you guys being a subscriber. If you haven't already and you're hearing this podcast somewhere else, you can subscribe to the Freedom Report podcast on iTunes or on Stitcher. Just go to iTunes and you can hit the subscribe button for us. That will help us to spread the message of economic freedom and personal liberty. And of course, don't forget to go to libertarianrepublic.com every single day, where we publish news and opinions from a libertarian perspective. And today we are going to be talking about a story that I saw on the Washington Post this morning. It looks like it came out yesterday, but it's a hot story and it's something that I think we really need to discuss as a nation, as an American people, because I don't like to say nice things about Donald Trump, but I'm going to say something nice about Donald Trump today because I think that while I disagree with almost everything that he says, I think that he's actually got great tactics about how he is constructing his campaign, and I think that it's important for us to learn from his tactics as libertarians, for us to understand why he's number one. And this article that came across my desk this morning, I just was like, wow, this is a fantastic read, and I think it perfectly explains why Donald Trump is leading in the polls. And the name of the article is Why Trump May Be Winning the War on Political Correctness. And this is by Karen Tumulty and Jenna Johnson, written again yesterday in the Washington Post. So you can follow along if you like. Kathy Cuthbertson once worked at what might be thought of as a command post of political correctness, the campus of a prestigious liberal arts college in Ohio. You know, I couldn't say Merry Christmas, and when we wrote things, we couldn't even say he or she, because we had transgender, people of color. I mean, we had to watch every word that came out of our mouth, because we were afraid of offending someone. But nobody's afraid of offending me, the former administrator said. All of which helps explain why the 63-year-old grandmother showed up at a recent Donald Trump rally in Hilton Head, South Carolina, where she moved when she retired a year ago. The Republican frontrunner is saying what a lot of Americans are thinking, but are afraid to say because they don't think it's politically correct, she said. But we're tired of just standing back and letting everyone else dictate what we're supposed to think and do. In the 2016 Republican presidential primary season, political correctness has become the all-purpose enemy. The candidates have suggested that it is the explanation for seemingly every threat that confronts the country. Terrorism, illegal immigration, an economic recovery that is leaving many behind, to name just a few. Others argue that growing antipathy to the notion of political correctness has become an all-purpose excuse for the inexcusable. They say it has emboldened too many to express racism, sexism, and intolerance, which endure even as the country grows more diverse. Driving powerful sentiments underground is not the same as expunging them, said William A. Galston, a Brookings Institution scholar who advised President Bill Clinton. What we're learning from Trump is that a lot of people have been biting their lips, but not changing their minds. One thing is clear, Trump is channeling a very mainstream frustration. In an October poll by Fairleigh Dickinson University, 68% agreed with the proposition that a big problem in this country is being politically correct. It was the sentiment felt strongly across the political spectrum by 62% of Democrats, 68% of independents, and 81% of Republicans. Among whites, 72% said they felt that way, but so did 61% of non-whites. People feel tremendous cultural condescension directed at them, and their values are being smirked at, laughed at, by the political and media elite, said GOP strategist Steve Schmidt. Political correctness are the two words that best respond to everything that a conservative feels put upon, added pollster Frank Luntz, who has advised Republicans. The label, he said, is a validation that what many on the right see as legitimate policy and cultural differences are not the same as racism, sexism, or heartlessness. Allegations of racism and sexism have turned into powerful silencing devices, Galston agreed. You can be opposed to affirmative action without being a racist. The PC backlash does not necessarily mean that people support the kinds of things that Trump is saying or the way that he says them. When the Fairleigh Dickinson pollsters added his name to the same question, prefacing it with, "Donald Trump said recently," the numbers dropped sharply. Only 53% said that they agree that political correctness is a major problem. This is not a new debate. It has raged since at least the early 1990s, when college campuses began adopting speech codes. Some went well beyond obvious slurs, with animal rights activists contending, for instance, that the word pet was disrespectful and should be changed to, quote, companion animal. More recently, the PC wars have flared again in academia, where there is an ongoing argument over whether campuses should be a, quote, safe space, where students are protected from upsetting ideas and receive, quote, trigger warnings when course material contains distressing information. Few would argue that it is wrong to confront and eliminate prejudice, but even some liberals have called political correctness a form of McCarthyism aimed at stifling free expression. Trump has brought the question from the university quad to the political arena in a way that no leading candidate has in the past. For many, it's satisfying to have a loud tribune like Trump, said David Axelrod, who was President Obama's top campaign advisor. But I don't think the hunger for authentic plain speech is Trump-specific. One of the appeals of Bernie Sanders is that people think he says exactly what he thinks and is not passing it through a filter. There is a fundamental yearning for authenticity that is probably felt more broadly. The edgy liberal comedian Bill Maher, who for nearly a decade hosted a talk show called Politically Incorrect, has said that Trump's ideas sound a little Hitler adjacent. But he has also noted a yearning for somebody to say, you know what, I just don't bend to your bull, you know, beep. If I had another producer in here, of course, we would beep that out. And Donald Trump, I've got to say, I don't agree with him on a lot, but I kind of get him. We've been doing the same thing. Trump sounded the anti-PC clarion call at the first Republican debate in August when moderator Megyn Kelly of Fox News challenged him on comments that he had made disparaging women. I think the big problem this country has is being politically correct, he said. I've been challenged by so many people, and I don't frankly have time for total political correctness. And to be honest with you, this country doesn't have time either. This country is in big trouble. We don't win anymore. We lose to China. We lose to Mexico, both in trade and at the border. We lose to everybody. It's hard to follow the logic of an argument that insulting women could somehow make the country stronger overseas, but the sentiment behind it came through clearly, and it has been picked up by other GOP contenders. Political correctness is killing people, said Senator Ted Cruz of Texas, because it prevents the Obama administration from focusing on the communications and activities of potential terrorists who are Muslims. Political correctness is ruining our country, said former neurosurgeon Ben Carson, after he was criticized for saying a Muslim should not be president. It is corrosive, Carson said in an interview, because many people will not say what they believe because someone will look askance at them, call them a name. Somebody will mess with their job, their family. This was not supposed to be the way it was in America. Last month's terrorist attack in San Bernardino, California, carried out by a Muslim couple who appear to have been inspired by the Islamic State, also known as ISIS, has become a case in point for many conservatives. They say political correctness has made the Obama administration too timid in calling it what it is, which is why Cruz and other Republicans taunt the president for not uttering the phrase radical Islamic terrorism. What animates ISIS is an apocalyptic religious philosophy. People look at that and don't understand the unwillingness to say red is red and blue is blue, Schmidt said. We live in a post-fact America where the facts are subordinate to the advancement of an ideology. Political strategists and others say a number of other forces are behind the backlash. It has both a cultural and an economic component, and it also reflects the continuing polarization that has grown deeper during Obama's presidency. For many of these people, they played the game by the rules, and essentially, they got shafted, Democratic pollster Peter Hart said. Trump is, quote, the voice of an aggrieved cohort in our society, lower middle income working whites who have taken the hit from the big changes in the economy and are angry about it, Axelrod said. He creates a permission structure for others. Cuthbertson, for instance, made a connection between her frustrations over political correctness and the other things she sees going on around her. I look at what I get every month and thank God I was financially savvy and saved. I can't live off Social Security. And you look at these people who have never worked and they're having babies and they're getting free rent and free food stamps and free medical care, she said. I couldn't afford what they have on my Social Security. And I worked for 50 years. Something has to be done because we're shrinking and we're being taken over by people who want to change what America is, she added. You can't say it nicely. And that's the end of this piece. And that was written by Karen Tumulty and Jenna Johnson at the Washington Post. And it was a really good piece, great coverage. And it does, as a libertarian, it does sort of, you know, make me cringe when I hear a lot of what Trump's supporters say, simply because it's not always just political correctness for the sake of being politically incorrect. For example, it's not always just criticizing affirmative action, for example. A lot of times you'll hear racist slurs from these conservatives. And so it does cause one to question if some people just want to have the ability to be racist in public, which, as a matter of fact, I do support. As a matter of fact, it's why I disagree with political correctness, is because if someone is an idiot, they should be allowed to be an idiot in as public a forum as possible, because wouldn't you rather know where the idiots are? One of the important parts of this article says that, you know, when you drive opinions underground, people bite their lips, but they don't change their minds. That's correct. And if you want to change people's minds, you have to be able to hear their opinions. Thomas Jefferson's famous quote, which is inscribed at the memorial, says, I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny against the mind of man, over the mind of man. And I read this quote, or actually I had that memorized. So I say this quote to you because Jefferson wasn't just talking about government tyranny. He was talking about every form of tyranny over the mind of man. And libertarians, I think sometimes we get caught up in just the government, and we say that, you know, perhaps the tyranny is just the government, and we have what we call thin libertarianism and thick libertarianism. And I guess I'm a medium libertarian in that sense, because I see political correctness as a form of tyranny. It's a soft form of tyranny. Some people like to say it's fascism with manners. And, you know, when people get offended, when people get upset, what are they really saying there? When it's like, oh, this offends me. This speech offends me. What are they really saying there? Well, what they're really saying there is, I can't control my emotions, so I need you to control them for me. And it's a form of weakness. And I really despise weakness as a sort of, you know, closet Nietzschean. I really think that we need to be strong and have a strong society and culture. And I think political correctness does make us weaker. It does make us weaker when we can't articulate how we feel, even if what we feel is, you know, bigoted, ignorant, hostile, you know, idiocy. Again, you know, what you see on Facebook and what you see on Facebook is a reflection, in some sense, of what people really feel on the inside. You know, a lot of people, times what people say in comment sections are things that they would never say in real life. Now, we don't want real life, obviously, to be like a Facebook comment section. That would be horrible because, gee, many Christmas. And wouldn't it be, it would be even worse if it was a YouTube comment section. If you listen to a podcast, you probably at least are digital savvy enough to understand what I'm talking about here. I mean, it's the sludge pot of the internet right there is the YouTube comments. Facebook comments tend to be a little bit more civil, but they're not as bad as YouTube commenters. But we don't want the rest of the world to be like that, of course. But I don't want people to be afraid to say what they really feel, because I would prefer to know. And this applies to things like, let's say people who are racist business owners, or people who are, let's talk about gay wedding cakes. Let's talk about the people who want to refuse service to homosexuals. They don't want to bake cakes for gay people. Well, you ought to have the right to do that. And people ought to have a right to boycott your business if they don't agree with you. But when you try and silence people or silence their opinions or views and silence their free speech, by bullying them. And there are PC bullies. And South Park has been taking this on beautifully with their bully-proof windows, you know, troll-proof walls. They've really been doing a good job at attacking the PC police because they're anti-bully bullies. And in a sense, sometimes you do need an anti-bully bully. If someone is a bully, you got to have a bigger bully to kick their butts. And that's important because that's really self-defense in a sense. But I do think that the political correctness police, the politically correct police, have gone too far. Ben Carson, in a speech, when this is what really made him famous, was when he attacked President Obama to his face at a national prayer breakfast several years ago, and he said, "Mr. President, the politically correct police are out in full force at all times," and he's absolutely right. I saw the other day that a young woman was trying to advance bullying legislation, anti-bullying legislation at the federal level. And how are you going to tell a girl, a little girl, she was, it looked like she had a disease or that she had either suffered from some sort of severe burns or something. I just saw the video for 30 seconds, quick scrolling through my timeline. But how can you look someone like that in the face and say, oh, I don't believe in bullying legislation? It's very difficult sometimes to stand up to people who think that they're doing the right thing. And Isabel Patterson, she was a libertarian writer, one of the founding mothers of the libertarian movement. She called people like this humanitarians with guillotines. And what that means are these are do-gooders and people who come with humanitarian intentions. But if you don't follow their humanitarian goals, then they will, you know, chop your head off. And that's what it feels like a lot of times with the politically correct police. It's something that we have to be careful of. It's something that we have to watch out for. And it's something that I think we have to manage as a society. So in a sense, Donald Trump is tapping into something very real. And I think as libertarians, we should probably learn from that. And I know it doesn't sound, when it comes from Donald Trump, you know, most people say, oh, you know, just like this poll did, the support for whatever was being said went way down. But we should learn from that as libertarians. We should understand that there are other forms of tyranny, and we should be very careful of it. Of course, in the libertarian movement right now, we have a very strong left libertarian movement. And a lot of these left libertarians are the type of they're the PC police. You know, they're the ones who want to, you know, drive out racism and bigotry. And in a sense, I agree with them. I find bigotry to be ignorant and hateful. And certainly a lot of people in the libertarian movement perhaps have views that I think are antithetical to libertarian police. But I think they should air them, and then we should have a debate about them. But what we shouldn't do is push it under the carpet and try and not talk about it. A lot of people sometimes say, well, you know, if you like Ron Paul, I like Ron Paul, but if you dare mention the newsletters, the Ron Paul newsletters, that's politically incorrect in libertarian circles. You can't, whatever you do, do not bring up the Ron Paul newsletters in libertarian circles, because there will be, you know, someone will violate the non-aggression principle. Don't bring it up. It's politically incorrect. Of course it is. But if we don't talk about it, then how are we going to ever move on? We have to address the issues and talk about it before we can move on. That's why I actually agree with some of these Republican candidates that President Obama's unwillingness to call out radical Islam for what it is emboldens our enemies. It does make it a problem if we cannot identify the root problems of the bad ideologies of the world and call them what they are. Then how are we going to combat them? You know, it's like trying to fight a ghost, a specter. It's sort of like saying, he who shall not be named. And in a sense, you give Voldemort power by not speaking his name and such. It gives him reverence. And so by not calling radical Islam, Islamic fundamentalism, or radical Islamic jihad, or totalitarianism, by not calling it what it is, you're empowering it because you're showing that you're afraid. And we should not be afraid as a nation. We should never be afraid. We should always be strong and courageous. It's okay to feel fear, because fear is a natural reaction. But just being afraid doesn't do anything for us. It doesn't advance our liberty. We need to be strong and brave and courageous. We need to be liberty warriors. And I think political correctness gets in the way of that. There's a time to be polite, and I believe in being polite. But as General Mattis said, be polite, be professional, but have a plan to kill everyone you meet. And of course, if I win the presidency of the United States, he will be my Secretary of Defense. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening to the Freedom Report podcast. If you enjoy the show, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, or if you don't have an Apple device, you can also find us on Stitcher, stitcher.com. And don't forget, you can leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. That would be very helpful in helping us spread the message. And don't forget to come back every single day to your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at thelibertarianrepublic.com.